Hello, everyone. Welcome to the CCW podcast. This is Al.
Daggy's here, too.
Welcome to episode 9. We're going to call this one CCW versus MMA, a discussion of the things that we've kind of compared and contrasted with carrying a concealed firearm and the martial arts, the traditional martial arts. Before we begin our main topic, though, to give you a little bit of update on our day-to-day lives, we have a new addition to the family, I guess.
Yeah, we made another purchase, or I should say Al did. I still have not made my own firearm purchase.
Mm-hmm. And we ended up getting that Glock 19 a little less than a week ago now. I got a Glock 19 used, very good shape. The gun shop that we got it at has a one-year warranty, too. So on the off chance that there are any problems with the Glock 19, I can return it. But externally, it looks great, and I took it apart the other day and looks great. I haven't shot any rounds through it yet. But that kind of brings us to our other bit of news that...
Yeah, I'm going to be taking my class to be able to qualify to get my concealed license tomorrow, and Al's going to be able to sit in, and we'll see how comfortable it is for the shooting part. It's going to be chilly here.
Right, and right now we're kind of discussing between us which firearm she should try, at least to take the class with, whether or not she should use the Carr P380, which hasn't been fired at all and is brand new. Or whether she should try the Glock 19, which is used, but again, we haven't fired it yet. So we did pick up ammo for both, just ball ammo, Winchester white box, but we're kind of leaning towards the Carr P380, and then if you run into any problems, you use the Glock 19.
Yeah, I'm really torn. You've heard in past episodes when we rented the car, it had an issue with the... ejecting into my forehead, but I have no idea if this one will do that. The Glock, I had an issue with the grips just being uncomfortable, but the issue with the car that we actually own, when we've been, you know, I've been trying to practice dry firing just a little bit and chambering and, you know, loosening the slide because everything's still really tight and new, is that the ammo doesn't want to feed. It doesn't want to chamber consistently at all, and I don't want to hold up the class tomorrow, so I'm really torn on which gun I should use.
Right. I mean, it could also be a good training exercise for you. We're looking at the silver lining. We're thinking the more failures she has to deal with and work through, the better, so she almost becomes comfortable with the possibility that something goes wrong with the gun. But we are seeing a lot of failures to feed, FTF. And the only way that we've been able to kind of avoid it...
Well, it was consistently feeding if we locked the slide back, inserted the magazine, and then dropped the slide lock. Mm-hmm. And then that stopped working consistently. And it seems like what Al noticed is that the tip of the bullet is tilted down.
Yeah, it's kind of nosediving right into the feed ramp rather than... guiding up, and I'm hoping it's just something that happens.
But I mean, it's rough because the one bullet, when I got it out, it was actually chipped. Like, there was a piece of the copper head that flaked off onto my fingertip, and there was a little divot in the tip of it.
Maybe some of you more experienced 380 users out there, I don't know if Andrew or Tom or Ross might know the answer to this, but the round nose Winchester white box that we got for the 380 has like a flat head to it. It almost looks like a wad cutter or something. It just has a, instead of a curved head to the bullet, it's actually kind of flat. It's a flat nose, and I don't know if that's normal or not, but that's what we got for the 380. I haven't seen that on the 9s or the 45, so that was a little odd, and I think that could be contributing to the feeding problems as well, but...
So I guess it's undecided which one I'll shoot tomorrow for the class.
I feel like it would be maybe good to try both if there's time and if they're okay with us using, or you using, both guns. But that was our big news, and she's taking her class tomorrow. So we're getting her, getting that ball rolling, and hopefully she'll have her permit by the summer. At the latest, we'll probably get it by the spring, hopefully here. But other than that, I guess we can get to our subject.
Sure. Why don't you give an example of the MMA, and just for people who maybe aren't familiar, it's mixed martial arts is what MMA is.
Yeah, I mean, martial arts, I mean, backing up, I guess Bruce Lee always had this vision of, matching boxer versus wrestler, or, a Muay Thai artist versus a jiu-jitsu grappler, judo player versus a, street fighter, and who would win in this type of fight. And in the early 90s, that actually became a reality, both in the U.S. and in Japan, where they had competitions, basically, where the outcome wasn't predetermined like you'd find in pro wrestling, where two people would literally go into the ring and one guy would emerge. And that sort of polymorphed into a more rules-based sport, where there was weight classes instituted and rounds instituted, but it's still pretty much, with the absence of street fighting, as close as we can get to two people duking it out and seeing who the better man is or better woman is, and not having any crimes committed, I guess. So it's sort of as close to what would happen if two people confronted one another in a hand-to-hand combat and seeing who the victor is without, putting people's lives at risk. But the reason I wanted to talk about this subject is I kind of wanted to... My martial arts background is predominantly in Muay Thai, a little bit of boxing as well. But I've noticed, as I've learned how to shoot and learned more about how to handle a firearm and carrying concealed, some parallels and some differences between that and what I learned and what I watch in MMA and in practicing martial arts. And I felt like maybe this subject might be of interest to some people, just the parallels and differences. We can talk a little bit about that. First and foremost, let's start with my mindset and my belief. When I first started, I guess my whole childhood, all the way up until adulthood, and even when I first started practicing Muay Thai, I always felt like I believed in like fair fights. Like if one person faced another person, that was okay. If two people faced one person, I had a big problem with that. Three people, four people against one person, I had a big problem with that. Four on four, that's fine. Three on three, that's fine. But then I also felt like, this whole using knives, using firearms was almost cheating. It was unfair. It didn't test your prowess. I always felt like it was mano a mano, one guy against one guy. You use what God gave you, and that was it. And I feel like many traditional martial artists have this view that you defend yourself with what you have with you, not with weapons necessarily. I don't know if that's true or not, but some martial artists, old school guys I know, they're doing that. Now you're noticing a new school who believe that, weapons are tools, and absolutely you use them and become proficient in them. And I've sort of morphed into that. That you use everything within your power and within your reach, and you become proficient with it to the point where you are the weapon. Your mind is the weapon, and anything that you can adapt to your scenario, your surroundings, and kind of just, learn on the fly, or, hopefully you've practiced with the things around you and become very skilled at them. But that's the first thing that I wanted to mention, is that when I was learning and growing up, and there was a disconnect with me in weapons and using them in fights. And
you're probably coming more from a purely like athletic, competitive fighting stance, though, right? I mean, you weren't thinking of self-defense in your home someday when you were a kid, were you? Or
yeah, that's a good point too, right? I mean, I guess I wasn't envisioning using the Muay Thai against someone who was invading your home, possibly with a weapon or something. That's a very good point. I mean, back then I was just trying to learn a cool thing, you know, having fun.
It's like about the purity of the art of the mixed martial arts or the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in martial arts, there's the warlike aspect, the martial part of it, the battle part, and then there's also the artistic element, the art, you know, that makes a person who practices these things a artist of some sort, at least, you know. So, I guess, I don't know, what did you want to talk about next?
Well, aside from your personal mindset, why don't you talk a little bit about the mental preparedness of a fighter versus someone who carries? I think there are probably some parallels in the mental preparation, maybe.
Yeah, I guess the thing about, I would think, like, if you're gonna have the right mindset, you're gonna want to know that, you know, the key word on a gunfight is not on the word gun, it's on the word fight, right? So I think what you have to focus in on is this element of being prepared and being ready to use what you need to use.
I mean, what jumps to my mind is how it's come up in a lot of different areas. When you're faced with something, you're going to revert to what you've trained on. So wouldn't you say, like, if you're in a fist fight or in the mixed martial arts, I mean, it's very much responding without preparation time.
Right. I mean, the books that I've read on the gunfighting is that you resort to the lowest level of your training, meaning that if you haven't trained for the situation, you won't know what to do. But if you have, you'll probably operate at about 50% of what your optimal training regime is, I guess. So, you know, in martial arts, people prepare for their fights through sparring, basically practice sessions with people you know and trust. And you put on, generally, you put on protective gear, whether it be in the form of large boxing gloves or shin pads or headgear or mouthpieces, definitely. And you simulate the events of a real fight, controlled, of course, with, you know, holding back on power and holding back on, you know, trying to hurt one another, and just use it, work on technique. You know, say, for instance, your left jab is your weakness. Maybe you work on exclusively your left jab, you know. And then the next day you work on a right kick. And maybe one of the times out of the three or four times a week you spar, you go pretty hard. But corollary to that, of course, is, you know, time at the range. If you take training classes with your handgun, working on things that you're, you know, trying to develop. You know, if you're working on trigger control 1 week or sight picture the other week, and just work on fundamentals.
I know I haven't done a lot of shooting. You have. I know with, like, the mixed martial arts, you'll hit a plateau in your progression. Have you experienced that with your shooting ability? Did you feel like when you were trying to learn the sights of your 1911 that you, you know, were so close but just couldn't get it right? Is there any corollary?
Yeah, I mean, with training, it was, like, to bring it back to martial arts, and I remember having a really decent, you know, because I'm right-handed, my right side technique was okay, meaning, like, my right body kick, which is a pretty big weapon in Muay Thai, meaning that you use it a lot on opponents, was really quite good from the beginning, and just got better as I got along. But what really stunk was my left kicks, you know. I had a really hard time with the left kicks. And I remember toiling away at the heavy bag for seemingly like a year. And just my hips wouldn't loosen up. I was just kind of slapping the bag. But, you know, you kept at it. You kept training. And it seemingly overnight, that snap was there. You know, not even the snap. It's in Muay Thai, it's different from karate. Karate, you kind of snap your kicks. In Muay Thai, you kind of loosen up the hips and just whip that leg around like a big baseball bat. And you kind of get this dull thud rather than a loud smack on the back. It's a really I remember just overnight my hips loosening up, me being able to just kick through the bag, and all of a sudden, you know, I felt like it became a strength of mine, you know, and it was working in sparring. I was connecting with that left body kick, which kind of hits the liver on most people, very effectively. And I draw that correlation with handling a firearm in that, well, I mean, I guess I anticipate that happening, because as to your question, I have been getting really, really good at firing my firearm. And I think because I'm still relatively new, I'm making very big leaps and bounds in my accuracy and in a lot of my shooting. The one thing I am kind of lacking in both, actually, is endurance. I find that I shoot really, really well in the beginning, and then as I fire, you know, as the round count goes up to about 60, 70, 80, 100 and above, fatigue sets in, and I'm having a hard time staying disciplined. And that's one thing that definitely has its parallels with martial arts or any athletic event, is when you get tired, sometimes you do lose your discipline, and it's then when you really have to get your fundamentals down. And I remember in Muay Thai, the guys, the instructors would want to get you tired. They would intentionally fatigue you with jump ropes, running, you know, stretching, lunges, things like that, jumping boxes before you got to the elements of sparring, or at least hitting pads or things like that, because they wanted you to be fatigued so that you'd focus on technique rather than trying to blow the pads out.
And I think that brings us back full circle to the mental. I think I tried to train Muay Thai with Alex way back when we first met. And he would do that to me. I mean, he was trying to tick me off, I think, because then I'd just wail on the pads he was holding. But when you hit that fatigue level, it brings focus. But what brings the focus, it's a very subconscious thing, is that you zone out. You're not obsessing over if you have the right form. Your body takes over. And at least that's what I experienced. And so I think that's the value of, you know, fatiguing yourself.
Right. I mean, when you try to teach someone something in terms of martial arts, you kind of try to break them out of trying to out-muscle the other person, or, you know, you try to kind of, if you got a big guy and you're holding pads for them, holding pads meaning you have these two long, almost pillow-like things along your forearms, and they kind of block or take the cushion of the punches and kicks and knees and elbows that someone could throw at you. It's kind of unique to Muay Thai. But that's what you, as a training partner, would hold for your, for the person who is training Muay Thai, and they would kind of, you would kind of orchestrate or pace their workout, calling for different punches and kicks. So, for instance, you know, you throw up your right pad and ask for a number two, which would signify a right straight or right cross. A number one would be a left jab if you're a conventional
right-hander.
Yeah, if you're a right-handed person, the numbers would change if you're a southpaw, obviously, but that's beyond the scope of this.
Yeah.
But the point was, what was it?
Just the mental preparedness and the parallels.
Yeah, you just want to fatigue. You want to, you know, if you got a new person who isn't disciplined, who hasn't been new to this and is trying to impress you or something, you kind of try to fatigue them out real quick by letting them throw those power punches. And if they're new to it, they're probably holding their breath, which is a bad idea. You always want to keep breathing on these things. And what you end up doing is you fatigue them and then have them so exhausted that all they're doing is listening to you, and you can kind of just get all that machismo out of them and just let them focus on what they need to get done. And then eventually your body will just kind of do that by nature, and it'll just revert to, oh, I don't have to out-muscle these guys. I'm in it for the long run. I need good technique. Good technique equals power, you know. And so that corollary, I guess, with using the handgun is this, you don't necessarily need to be, you know, the super fast guy off the draw onto target. There's a term in using handguns and handgunnery that smooth is fast. And, you know, that's very much could be a martial arts, maxim as well. Smooth is fast, you know, in all sports, sometimes the most talented people look like they're doing moves that are effortless to them. And it's not effortless to them. It's just, it has become so because it took 10,000 hours of training to make it look that effortless, you know? It's the same thing with drawing a firearm, you know? Those repetitions add up, and if you do it the right way, the right time for, you know, 5,000 times, it's going to look easy to someone else who's going to look at you and go, wow, you know, that you made that look so easy. And I, with maybe them not knowing how much work it took to get involved. And so,
I think that kind of leads us into, with all of this kind of alluding to form and technique, let's talk about the form a little bit. I think that would kind of lend itself later to the technique discussion. But what are some similarities or differences in form?
Yeah, I think we talked about this a little bit in the other podcast, is we, you know, holding the gun and firing. It all starts with your stance. Same thing with martial arts. It all starts with your stance. And where does your stance start? It starts in your toes and in your feet. Traditionally, you want to stand on the balls of your feet in martial arts. Some Muay Thai guys like to stand on the balls of their feet. And I'm a little bit of a guy who stands on the heels of your feet, actually, a little bit sometimes for kicks and whatnot. I know a lot of people say, no, you got to be on your balls of your feet and pivot that way. But definitely, that balls on your feet point of view is something that you do for shooting as well. You want to be on the fronts of your feet and be balanced, maybe a little bit more weight on your front foot, but I'd say about 50-50 anyways. And it's a staggered stance. I like a staggered stance, at least, probably because of the martial arts background, and I think you like the staggered stance too.
From a practical standpoint,
staggered meaning one, the left foot in front of the right foot.
Right. I think typically, I mean, I know from training with you on the Muay Thai, it's typically your non-dominant legs. I'm right-handed, so my left leg would be forward, like my lead leg. And it carries over directly to shooting because my right side is going to take that force coming back after I shoot, and it's there to prop me up, to take the impact, and, you know, keep me propped up. And not, and it's not a huge staggered stance or anything. It's maybe a foot length, you know, like it would be heel to toe, but my feet are shoulder width apart.
Right. I mean, and first, you know, first and foremost, everyone's built differently. You might have really long legs, big feet, small feet, short legs, you know, so always make sure that it's a comfortable stance, you know. One thing that I've learned, watching videos on martial arts is one guy will have a newbie in there who's never fought or never trained at all. In this case, it'd be a boxing scenario. And the guy had this person jump up and down, straight up and down, straight up and down, straight up and down. And the instructor just shoved him. And the way that that person landed in with his feet kind of staggered, he told him that would be your boxing stance. You know, what you naturally kind of just fall into. So that's a pretty good example, I think. And that's the, you know, you want that same balance when you're shooting a firearm, too. You want your knees a little bent, your weight on the balls of your feet, staggered stance, you know. And so, and in terms of that, also in form, talked about a little bit in another podcast, is the similarities between throwing a punch in martial arts and how you hold your gun when you fire it. And if you remember, you want to try to explain it?
Well, I, starting with the mixed martial arts, I really struggled to get my grip right and to not hurt my thumb. When I'm throwing punches. And so I really struggled with getting it right. And then when I got it right, it really clicked. And I think I may have noticed this parallel before Al even did, because I struggled with it so much, maybe, is that when I shot the J-frame snub nose, I hurt back in the joint of my thumb where it kind of connects to my wrist. And I believe the man at that lady shoot commented to me, like, you need to, you know, rotate your hand around it and grip it a little bit differently. And when I looked at the difference and how I should have been holding it, it was that perfect line that Al has spoken of in other podcasts. And it's wanting all of your bones to align so that it's a straight line from your elbow down your arm through your wrist and through your hands, and your gun would be an extension of that line. You want everything just nice and straight.
Right. Like, let's pretend there's an X-ray machine on, you know, you when you're at your firing range, and you want to see those bones all form a straight line that goes from your elbow through your forearm bones, through your wrist bones, right into the grip of the gun, and then through its barrel and shoot out to the straight line to the target. What that basically will equate to is that when you fire that weapon and the recoil happens, it'll jump right into all that mass that you have supporting the firearm. It won't be just your wrist taking the brunt of the blow. It'll be your entire forearm and even all the way up your arm to your bicep bones, or whatever those bones are called in the upper arm. I know it's not called bicep bones, but you know what I mean. And it's the same thing with throwing a punch. You know, there's a common bone in your knuckle area that boxers break, and it's I don't know what it was called, metacarpal maybe. I don't quote me on that, but it's a bone that boxers break because they get taped up so well that they sometimes don't have that perfect form. You know, if you talk to guys who do Kyokushin karate, which is a very full contact type of old school karate where you're using a lot of bare knuckles in your fighting, they've been taught to use excellent form, meaning their knuckles are completely just like the gun, except use a fist this time, turn your wrist over, make a fist. And this time it's the same rule, except you're using, instead of the gun, you're using your middle knuckle as a guideline. And you want that middle knuckle to go right through your wrist, up your forearm, all the way up your upper arm, and almost create a one straight line, at least on the point of impact, you know. So when that point of impact, your middle knuckle, hits whatever barrier you're trying to get through, it's got the strength of your entire upper arm, your legs, your hips, your torso, your shoulders, and ultimately right through into that target. And it's a very strong support base that really you can hit quite a lot of force with and not have any broken bones. And same thing with the gun, you know. All that force, not that much pain, you know. That's a good thing. So that we talked a little bit about the punch and the grip, and smooth is fast. What else did you want to talk about?
I think it brings us to our third broad category. We talked about the mental and the form, and then technique, more about kind of throwing it all together, and general tips, and maybe more differences in this category than okay. the others.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the techniques, you know. One of the things that are similar and different is that you want to create distance in martial arts and in presumably in using your firearm against someone.
Or control the distance might be a better...
Exactly. It's
by definition,
right, you in a martial art, hand-to-hand combat, unarmed combat, you're going to need to be within touching distance, at least within kicking distance. And that's where you kind of want to start, is a little bit beyond that when you're, you know, training for a sparring event. You know, this isn't necessarily what you want to do in street fights, and I'm not sure I want to give a lot of advice on what to do on street fights. But, you know, if you're talking about training in a martial arts and a sport type element, one of the things that two experienced fighters will do when they're meeting for the first time in sparring or in the cage on the UFC event is that they'll kind of measure each other out, meaning they'll kind of throw out a kick, throw out a punch, not with the intent of hitting necessarily, but kind of to gauge, okay, this is how far I need to be to hit you with a left kick, and this is how far I need to be to hit you with a right punch. I'm too close for that because he just hit me with a jab of his own, so maybe he's got a better reach than I do. Maybe I now got to work inside, work on his body, do something different. And that's kind of that, sometimes the fans boo that first round because that's what these two fighters are doing. They're so skilled that they really are just trying to get a measure of the distance, and then they'll start throwing in some blows with authority. So that's what you want to do, is create a distance. Now, in handguns, obviously, what's the distance? It's much further. I mean, chances are you're going to be pretty close to whoever is you might be thinking of using it, whether it be under home invasion or a robbery or, you know, physical assault. Your life is in danger. So here we want to talk about creating distance, meaning get away from that threat if you can. Obviously, if there's a loved one in between you and the threat, you don't necessarily want to create distance because that's separating you from your loved one. But most cases and most things that I'm reading and seeing, they want you to take cover. You know, they want you to take a defensive stance if possible. You know, and from cover, you not only have the advantage of shelter and protection, but you maybe also have some time to evaluate and maybe take inventory of what's really going on. But that's the creating distance is very important, and measuring distance is very important in both, it seems.
Can you talk a little bit maybe about the similarities or differences in choosing your technique based on the distance, or choosing your weapon, as it were?
Well, I mean, at the longest distances, right, we're talking, you know, upwards of 1,000 yards or whatever, you'd want to use your long gun, right? You'd want to use your rifle.
And I guess I should clarify. Okay. I mean, if somebody's that far away, you're not going to be shooting to protect yourself. Yeah. More than likely. I guess what...
Absent,
what
like, war situations or chaos. Yeah. Hard time thinking that would be a justified shooting, right?
Yeah. I guess I'm thinking more along the lines of choose the proper gun for the job.
Right.
Which is the parallel to, like, if you're in the ring, you know, you can't do kicks if you're right up next to the person. You can do knees. Or if it's really close, it's the grappling on the ground. I mean, you're gonna have to choose your technique based on the proximity too.
Right. I mean, there was a good TV show, like something Deadliest Warrior or something like that. And they had a guy on the U.S. Special Forces who was a mixed martial artist by the name of Tim Kennedy. And he showed techniques basically about how he would engage an opponent with his rifle, and then when he got in too close, he would actually use grappling and jujitsu and those types of techniques to get the opponent down and in a submission to kind of incapacitate him. But he also showed that he could flawlessly transition from using his firearm to grappling when the distance or the opponent dictated that, and he had to kind of grapple and control and then separate, and as soon as he separated, he went right back to his rifle, and the transition was so smooth and so fast, it was quite interesting to watch at how proficient he was with so many different forms of martial arts, you know. Rifle, when he was far away, when he closed in, he could have gone to a handgun, I suppose, but I think what ended up happening is he engaged his opponent via grappling, and you know, put him down, and then when he took him down, he separated and created more distance, and then locked on with that weapon, and it was very interesting. And I think that that's another element, I guess, maybe you were thinking of. You know, if someone is within range of you and grabs you while you have your firearm, maybe the first thing you do isn't grab your firearm, but is to create distance and get that person away from you.
I mean, particularly, I mean, this goes back to choosing your weapon. If you're not carrying a revolver and you're in really close quarters, you're not going to be able to use it effectively.
Well, I mean, what you're saying, I guess, is that semi-autos will kind of jam up if you're right up against them. Yeah, that's what I heard. And usually you can get one round off, you know, and sometimes, you know, that one round may be all you need. So, yeah, I mean, it might get gunked up, not to get too gross, but, you know, it might get clogged up with clothing or whatever. That you
just
don't have
just practical. I mean, knowing.
Yeah, and the things that the videos that I've seen that show you really close point shooting, you in that situation, you'd go up against the target, touch it with the barrel, and then move it back a couple of inches, just so you don't risk that cycling jam, you know, from having a barrier there. But in these types of situations, you know, I mean, it's all about, I think, what you're going to be comfortable with, you know, in training. And what you've sort of prepared yourself to do, you know, in that situation. What is a normal person going to do if someone's confronting them, grabbing them, and you're in fear for your life? What are you going to do? Are you, you know, if the person has their hands around your throat, what are you going to do? Is the natural inclination going to be draw your weapon? Maybe if you're trained, but if you're not, you're going to go to your throat. You know, you're going to try to get that immediate thing resolved. And that's another thing that you kind of want to work with. The difference, like in martial arts, you kind of want to stay disciplined, and the goal of martial arts is self-defense and self-discipline, you know. I see a lot of parallels with that and using a firearm, too. It's really about self-defense, but it's more importantly, it teaches you self-discipline. Once you have a carry permit, right, you have to be a good person, like I said before. You have to be self-disciplined. You can't be the hothead you may have been in your previous pre-CCW life. You know, you have to be disciplined or they will take that right away from you. I recently read some story, in fact, today, about a CCW holder who was caught shoplifting. And he would have gotten a misdemeanor charge, but for his legally carrying a firearm, it was elevated to felony robbery. So right then and there, I mean, come on. I don't know about the legalities of all that, but all I'm saying is, be more self-disciplined, and that's martial arts teaches, if anything, teaches you that.
You have a higher standard, basically, in the eyes of the law once you, you know, are carrying.
Right, absolutely. And even as a martial artist, I believe there is a case law out there that says that you're, you know, you might be a quote-unquote walking deadly weapon, meaning that, you know, your hands and fists.
That's kind of cool.
You know, I've used that line before as jokes, but, you know, I got to register these hands. When I cross state lines, lethal weapons, you know. But, you know, that was all tongue-in-cheek, of course. But, you know, obviously, if that, you know, there are standards of, you know, if you know that this person is a black belt, then all of a sudden he becomes more dangerous to you, and you might even be able to use lethal force on them. I don't know. You obviously consult your state's laws and all that. But, yeah, I mean, the standard is high, you know, in both, you know. Both have to be self-disciplined. Both. Remember why you're doing it, right? Because it's to defend yourself, your loved ones, stop the threat, and get out of there without getting hurt, you know, or minimize the hurt. Go home to your family, right? That's the bottom line. That's why you learn this stuff.
I think the final note I had, one other thing under technique was, I have circling jotted down. I think...
Big difference. And I haven't heard this anywhere, so I'm kind of proud of it. But this is a CCW podcast exclusive, so I hope I hear it on other podcasts and eventually in books and stuff. But I kind of built it up too much, obviously, right now. But it's what I learned is, you know, in martial arts and in, when you're sparring some guy and, you know, fighting some guy, say you know he's got a wicked overhand right, meaning that he's just got a really strong right-hand punch. And he's an orthodox fighter. He's a right-handed fighter. So you know that right-hand punch is, that's what makes the highlights. That's what he's knocked out, you know, so many guys in practice with. And you know, whoa, I got to stay away from this guy's right hand. So what do you do in martial arts? What do? You circle to your right. You circle to his left. You circle out, meaning that you move in a circle away from that right hand, right? And that's what you want to do. You want to force him to use other things, you know, because if you're circling right, then that means the opponent has to use his left side, his weak side. He doesn't get to immediately use that right hand. He's got to set you up, you know. So it complicates matters for him. In firearms, and in facing an armed attacker, someone with a firearm there, you, so they say, move towards the weapon hand, meaning you circle left to his right if he's right-handed and has a gun pointed at you, because apparently it's much harder for that gunman to swing his firearm to the right than it is for him to swing it left. And I guess maybe Dagny, you thought you might know the reason why.
Oh, I don't know if I'll remember what you're remembering, so you'll have to tell me. But to me, it just makes sense. If you're approaching closer to the weapon, the sights, I mean, he's not going to be sighted on you and, you know, like looking down the sights of his gun probably, but just to be able to swing it and close that distance and remain accurate, I would think it's going to be a lot harder.
Right, and I should clarify too. It's you're not necessarily going towards the weapon. I never. I would, unless you know, unless that person's touching you with that firearm, I would never recommend you going towards the weapon. Obviously, and I would never recommend you do anything that I say. This is all just for fun and games, because I myself, you know, am a novice at a lot of this stuff. But what I'm saying is, what I've read that is that you circle away from that right from towards that firearm, meaning you circle in the same direction as that gun hand, meaning you still circle out wide, but instead of circling out right to avoid the right-handed punch, you're circling left towards the right side of that person. You're still going away from them, though. You're still trying to create distance that way and trying to be a hard target move. Gabe Suarez calls it get off the X, you know, and that definitely is a martial arts principle. You don't want to be where the guy's throwing his punches and kicks. You want to, you know, if he's looking at this spot where you're at, and let's say there's an X there, he's running at you with that X full of fury, you want to get off there. What they call it in martial arts, they call it angles, create angles. You know, if he's pointing at you and looking at you from the X, you get off that X, all of a sudden he's pointing at something that isn't there anymore, and you have a strategic advantage because you have an angle on him. And in martial arts and in boxing, you want to create angles, meaning that if I'm no longer at that X and my opponent's staring at that X and I'm now 45 degrees away, I can punch, kick, and do a lot of things to you, and you can probably only reach me with one half of your body, your right side, say, if I moved to his right or to my left, if you can kind of imagine that. So that's the one big difference, you know. If some, you know, the firearms industry, they teach you gunman's on you with a right hand, you move towards that side but away from him, and that him moving that firearm to the right is harder for him to line you up than if he needs to just move it left a little bit. If you circled right, I hope that makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was one thing I really noticed, and I really wanted to point that out. So that was the whole reason for this podcast. So I hope you enjoyed that.
Yeah, I don't know that I have any other notes for tonight. I'm trying to think if there's any other kind of housekeeping stuff. Nothing comes to mind. How about you?
I just want to say maybe like, you know, obviously we carry firearms, or if you're thinking about carrying a firearm, remember that it's a last resort, right? I mean, I'm not saying that any of this stuff, you know, you pull it out whenever you think, you know, oh, that something's going to happen, or, you know, you got to be very, you know, you have to be pretty sure. You have to be sure to the extent that reasonable people would be sure if they were in your situation, you know, that it was life or death, grave bodily harm, or whatever your statutes say. So, you know, obviously, these are some of the things that I've thought. I'm not, they don't give out black belts in Muay Thai, so I'm not a black belt. I'm a big fan. I'm a lifelong student of Muay Thai, and it gave me great joy to kind of see the parallels between Muay Thai martial arts and, using your handgun, carrying a gun, CCW life in general, the life of a CCW permit holder and the life of a martial artist, I think, are very, very similar, at least at their best of each. I think they're very, very similar, you know. There's one thing that I really wanted to kind of talk about, though, is, you know, there's a beauty in martial arts, this kind of poetic, almost dancing-like quality, rhythm to it that I haven't quite yet seen in using a firearm. You know, the firearm, it's very direct, it's blunt, it's you know, pull, you know, it's a very, I don't want to say savage, it's a very primitive, it's, you know,
I think
systematic, fundamental, boom, you know.
Well, I don't think that the art would ever be in the interaction with another person. I think the art would be in the fluid motion, like the smooth draw.
Right.
And the smooth is fast. I think it would be seeing video of yourself at the range, or if you get into competition shooting, you know, seeing a quick draw and a still hand as you shoot at a moving target as you're moving or something. You know, absolutely. I don't know. I've never been to a competition, but right. I'm just imagining that it all will come down to your form and your technique when they're in play.
Yeah, I suppose there is beauty in that, and that's a very good point that I hadn't really thought about. That's very good. I guess it is that whole realization that, hey, you know, fundamentally this is can be a lethal device, and I guess that sort of detracts from me wanting to say that there's beauty in handling a firearm. You know, you don't want to get lost and romanticize something that's very serious. I think that is probably my difficulty in kind of comparing those two, martial arts and handling a firearm, is, you know, you kind of realize that the real life encounters, and I guess in real life encounters with just two people in fisticuffs, it's ugly, you know, it's ugly. It's not choreographed in any way. It's reality, and sometimes reality can be very brutal. You know, the better man doesn't always win, you know, but they usually do. So that's why we train, you know. You see it in the UFC, you see it out on YouTube videos, you know. The trained guy doesn't always win. Sometimes, you know, there is not justice. You know, the guy gets a lucky punch, or someone is quicker on the draw, or, you know, 22 sometimes beats the 45. You know, it happens. So, but does that stop us from training and getting better? No, because statistically, you know, the better man usually does win. Better woman usually does win, and that's what we hope for. And We don't want luck, even though we'd rather be lucky than good, you know. But we want to be good and lucky, right? So,
I guess I have one last thing to say, and this is unrelated to the other content we've put up tonight. Is that we're hoping to get a little bit more content up on the websites, not a full fledged blog, but maybe some links to some articles, or the YouTube video or the show that Al mentioned about Tim Kennedy demonstrating the distance advantage and stuff.
Yeah, let's see what we can find. The blog, if it ever gets flushed out, is ccwshow.blogspot.com. ccwshow, S-H-O-W, dot blogspot, blogspot.com. And I mentioned our Podomatic site and spelled Podomatic wrong in the last time I talked. So that Podomatic site, which is also where you can directly download podcasts, is ccwpodcast.podomatic.com. P-O-D-O-M-A-T-I-C. P-O-D-O-M-A-T-I-C. .com.
Didn't know we were doing a spelling bee on this
one,
did
ya? Oh my goodness. Can you tell? Wow, I'm not a...
Thank goodness it's Friday.
It is. And thank you. We just hit 2,000 plus downloads, guys. So that was pretty awesome. Again, please feel free to keep emailing us. We'd really love emails. Please, you know, criticisms, praise, whatever is on your mind, ccwpodcast@gmail.com. And no one sent Dagny any emails directly, so please send them in, ladies, or even guys, whoever you you want to talk to Dagny about. But with that, I think we're done, huh?
Yeah, I think this is it.
It's a long episode, guys. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been worth the wait, hopefully.
All right, stay tuned.